listening to Fox Sports Radio. This is Straight Out of Vegas with the voice of Vegas, your host, RJ Bell. The pregame show America has always wanted. I doubt the future. I doubt the future. From the Vegas Strip, here's RJ Bell.
Straight out of Vegas here on Fox Sports Radio. RJ Bell is out. I am Jonas Knox in for RJ alongside Brad Powers and Steve Fezzik as we take you all the way up until 7 p.m. Eastern time right here on Fox Sports Radio. And of course, you can always listen to the show on the iHeartRadio app. Guys, great to be back. Brad Powers, saw a little bit of college football in Honolulu. I was at the Hawaii-Arizona game, but it is good to be back with you and Fez here on SOV.
Good to have you back, Jonas. We certainly missed you. But I got to ask, you know, I mean, not everyone gets a chance to go to Hawaii. Even a guy like my, I bet you're going there 3-4 times a year with all your vacations. But I've never been there. So, I mean, it's the first time you've missed some time here. I want to hear it. How was it in Hawaii, Jonas?
It's different. Everybody's at a leisurely pace. And so when you're used to the commutes and all that stuff and everybody's on the rush here, go, go, go. And especially in radio, it's all about timing and clock and everything. So you can't be late. You have to be on time for this. You have to be on time for that. And in Hawaii, they just do as they please. It is the most laid back vibe. The Uber drivers never go over about 40 miles an hour, which gets really frustrating when you're trying to make a 4:30 local time kickoff to a game. But nonetheless, it was a good time. A lot of sun. A lot of walking around, some carbs, some Kona beer, but a good time had by all. So it was fun to get away for a little bit, but I'm happy to be back. So, and plus, we got football right around the corner. So who isn't fired up about this?
One quick lifestyle question: Waikiki or the rest of the island? Which do you like better?
I don't know. I mean, you can't go wrong with either, but the north shore of the island is more of the jungle side, to where they tell you that's where the locals go. You know, go to the north shore, that's where you get to see real Hawaii. And then Waikiki is more of the busier downtown type style. There's a lot of foot traffic, a lot of people there. You can't go wrong either way. It just depends on what your preference is. So we split it up. We spent half the time on the north shore and then the other half in Waikiki, and we were good with that. So maybe we'll bounce around to some other islands.
Enough with the Jonas Knox lifestyle. Let's talk about why everyone's here. Football. Break it down for me. Went to see the Hawaii game. Your observations.
Yeah, Hawaii and Arizona. First of all, Cole McDonald. Look, I don't want to say that he's as talented as Jay Cutler, but he's got some Jay Cutler in him. My God, some of the throws that he was making, and he's the quarterback for Hawaii, which has the long hair, the dreads, which, by the way, Brad, I don't know, where do you put Cole McDonald so far? Do you put him in the Timmy Chang class, or is he a Colt Brennan-type style quarterback there for the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors?
Wow. Neither yet.
Yeah. So Cole McDonald was making some of these throws. They were going off receivers' hands. A couple resulted in an interception. And I remember the last throw that he made before they pulled him from the game was across his body into traffic in the middle of the field, the biggest no-no. And I told my fiance, the second the ball left his hands, I just said, oh, God. She's like, what? I'm going to watch. And it was picked off, and you knew what was going to happen after that. So they benched him. They brought in the backup. Hawaii went on to win the game. Six turnovers, which was crazy to see Hawaii turn the ball over that much. People on the sidelines were looking around going, what the hell's happening here? It finally occurred to me in talking with Dan Beyer, who was filling in for Doug Gottlieb here on Fox Sports Radio before the show, I couldn't figure out why Hawaii's sideline switched. So last year we were on the sideline, but it was on the opposite side facing where the camera faces. And I couldn't figure it out until Dan made an obvious point that I should have realized at that time. They put Arizona in the sun. So yep. The sun was directly on Arizona and that side of the field, and it was brutal. It was humid. It was hot. So some strategic planning there by Hawaii as to where they wanted to line up. And so we were in the shade the whole time, so we could see everything clearly. So every time there was a bad throw or a miss or anything like that, it looked like Hawaii was going to run away with it, but Cole McDonald kept turning the ball over. I was also surprised. Hawaii looked bigger than Arizona, and I know Kevin Sumlin just got there, and I know they're trying to turn things around in Arizona after the Rich Rodriguez disaster and how that ended up, but Hawaii looked like a bigger, more physical team, and it went down to the wire, and unfortunately, we had a remake of the Super Bowl and Kevin Dyson reaching for the goal line, but unfortunately, it came up a yard short. So, there was that.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree with you. Kevin Sumlin, I mean, that could be a quick stay in Tucson, losing that one, and history was made, Jonas, not just because Jonas Knox was on the sideline of a game, a week zero game.
Right.
But how about this? Because you mentioned Hawaii turning it over. I didn't get a chance to say this. How about this? If you're a double-digit underdog in college football, and we're going back to 1980. This is where all the databases go back almost 40 years now. You're a double-digit dog, and you turn it over five times or more. Hawaii actually turned it over six times. Prior to last Saturday's game, Jonas, those double-digit dogs in those games where they turned it over a bunch, 1 and 245.
Jesus.
1 out of 246 until Hawaii pulled that. That's not a good look for Arizona. You can't beat a team that turns it over six times from a group of five conference fest.
Yeah, and there's a betting lesson from this, and it makes sense. Think about it. If you're supposed to lose by 10 or more points and you turn it over five times, you simply shouldn't win, except if the line on the game is wrong. And right now, you've got to go ahead and take your power ratings and put an asterisk by them because we really don't know how good these teams are. I know, Brad, you made a significant adjustment in your power ratings based on just one game, right?
Yeah, I 4-point adjustment for me, which is major. So I'm going to say, why didn't you do it more? Here's why. Here's what I've seen, Jonas. And I know we're getting into a little bit of the weeds here, and we'll talk Hard Knocks in a second. But here's what I've noticed from Hawaii. Hawaii's been doing this season opener stuff, exceeding expectations now for about a decade. If you count all the week zero and week one games, Hawaii in the last decade is 12-1 against the number. They're covering those games by 10 points per game. So what happens? They're usually isolated TV games. Everyone sees Hawaii greatly exceed expectations, so everyone bumps them up. Well, since week zero and week one, how is Hawaii doing the rest of the season, weeks two, three, four, all the way through 12? They're only covering about 38% of the time, Fez. So I'm careful not to upgrade Hawaii too much like the market's done in recent past.
Here's the other part, and just in thinking about that, I'm glad you brought up the standalone aspect to that game. So yeah, those two games on national TV, this is probably the biggest audience Hawaii is going to have the entire season. If you think about it, and not looking at their schedule individually, but normally it's at the end of the night, East Coast time. Everybody's either hammered, drunk, they've lost everything, and they're just trying to get back something. So you'll get your degenerate crowd that'll watch Hawaii late games, especially if it's a 7:30 kickoff in Hawaii, which turns out to be 1:30 a.m. or whatever time it is, depending on your time zone in the East Coast. But you're on it's a standalone game, and I just wonder how many of these standalone games and bad losses Kevin Sumlin can go through and Arizona can go through before people start to go and overreact to, okay, this looks bad, it made us look bad, and then to your point, people overreact the other way and look at Hawaii and where they go based on their season upcoming. I just, with those two games and not like the normal week zero where you get some garbage teams that are kind of thrown in there five or six, we only had two this week, so I'd imagine there's going to be an overreaction one way or the other, not only with Hawaii and Arizona, but also Miami and Florida, Brad.
Certainly. I think that's going to be the case. And I think people are going to throw Arizona in the trash. I might have, because I mean, that was almost inexcusable, Fez. But the Florida-Miami game, the biggest takeaway from that, and we haven't gotten into that too much in the last couple of days, but I mean, just the overall sloppiness of the game. But I'll say this. We're going to see some sloppy football. Just breaking news here.
Yeah.
This starting tomorrow on Thursday, the next 5 days starting tomorrow, we're going to see a lot of sloppiness on college football because they don't have a preseason. And let's face it, they've cut back a lot of the practice as far as the hitting. No more two-a-days in college football. So if you think you saw a lot of missed tackles between Florida and Miami, news for you, you're going to see a lot this upcoming next 5 days of college football action.
Yeah, and by the way, if you complain about the sloppy football you watch in college football this weekend, because we've got the four-day bonanza, which we love, which is the quote-unquote official start to the season in college football, like, I don't want to hear anybody say, well, how come college football players can get out there with no preseason and they don't seem to skip a beat? Watch this weekend. It's going to be poor tackling. It's going to be turnovers. I mean, you had Hawaii. How many turnovers were in the Hawaii-Arizona game? Was there like 10? Like 9 Eight. Or 10? Yeah, it's crazy. So I just think this is what comes with being a little rusty, and it's why I don't mind when powerhouse programs choose to play cupcakes early on in the season. I do not mind it at all. In fact, I actually get it. So if you're in Alabama and you play Doritos State or whatever it is to start out the season, I have no issue with it because they're trying to work out the kinks. And I know Alabama's got other issues, Brad, that we will get into later on here in the program, and a major adjustment made by you when it comes to the upcoming season for the Crimson Tide. Straight out of Vegas here on Fox Sports Radio. All right, so guys, let's get into it. Hard Knocks on HBO, and I'm just going to tell you this. The most lackluster Hard Knocks season I can recall in a long, long time, and maybe in the history of the series. It feels like, and Brad, maybe I'm crazy, Fez, maybe I'm nuts, but it feels like a TV show, and it doesn't even feel like a reality show. There's no substance. I don't see any struggle. There's no drama. It just feels like the Raiders have controlled the narrative all the way along as to how they want to be portrayed by HBO, and HBO's conceded that sort of power because they realize it's an invasive project and you're going to get an inside look at these teams, but this does not feel like any other season of Hard Knocks that we've watched.
I don't feel I've gotten an inside look at the Raiders at all. I've got an inside look at the Gruden show. It's all about John Gruden, and there's a reason why Gruden is on that billboard on I-15 right by Mandalay Bay as you're driving into the strip from L.A. He is the Raiders. I got to tell you, Jonas, I'm waiting to see, like, the coordinators talking. I don't know if the coordinators are sick. They're not appearing on the show. There is not one compelling character that I'm watching other than John Gruden.
Yeah, I totally agree. And there's not even... Look, usually they would spend more time talking about these guys that are, will they make the team, will they not make the team? And they did a little bit of that last night. But, Brad, I haven't really seen any of that. This has been all about John Gruden and knock on wood and how cool of a coach he is and how much he gets along and how much he, you know, he's used car salesman to some of these players. But it just feels like HBO has let the Raiders determine how the message is going to be portrayed. And because of that, we've seen nothing but positive when it comes to the Oakland Raiders. And Fez, although that may have fooled a bunch of people watching, it hasn't really fooled many of the sharps, many of the bettors that are looking at the Oakland Raiders. What has the market said about the reaction to Hard Knocks?
The market is fading the Raiders. I'll go into details, but what's interesting here, Jonas, is so we've seen all four episodes here, nothing but positive about how well the Raiders are doing. They've won all three of their games, and yet what has the betting marketplace reaction been to it? Completely disregarding it. If anything, the bettors feel it's a distraction for the Raiders. Look no further than week one, the Raiders, Monday Night Football. The Raiders were laying 2.5 a month ago when Hard Knocks started. Well, the Raiders are no longer the favorite. Now the line is pick 'em against Denver. And you know what, Jonas? The Raiders better win that game because the six games after Denver, they're an underdog in all six.
And so you guys, I know, have been very adamant about the over-under win total on the Oakland Raiders. Brad, does this just strengthen your case? Do you feel better about it after watching Hard Knocks?
Not particularly. I mean, I'm still all about the under, and it's more about the travel than anything for me. I mean, Oakland is traveling more than any team in the NFL, and it's not even close. It's like five times as much travel as, like, the Jets, who don't even leave the Eastern time zone this year, Fez. Got to be frank, they've looked better than what I thought personnel-wise. So in that regard, I think that there's been a little bit of an upgrade, but I still under six wins because to me, it's what we went back to last fall. To me, it's all about the Raiders getting to Vegas. It's not about the wins and losses right now. And I think that's what the TV show's portraying. It's all about John Gruden. That's why he was hired as the Oakland head coach to get the Raiders to Vegas.
And I'm concerned that it's been such smooth sailing in preseason and that they've won all their games and they really haven't faced any adversity, knock on wood with me if you agree, that when the inevitable losing streak occurs, there could be some serious locker room problems.
And by the way, Nathan Peterman and this whole John Gruden's love affair with Nathan Peterman, let me just say this. John Gruden does have a success rate with taking quarterbacks who have maybe struggled elsewhere and getting the most out of them, whether it be Rich Gannon, whether it be Brad Johnson. He did some good things with Jeff Garcia. Brad, you pointed out before the show, Chris Sims, I believe, was in a playoff game with John Gruden as the quarterback. So I get all that. But this feels like John Gruden's ego is at play, to where John Gruden looks at Nathan Peterman and says, hold on a second, this guy was laughed at. This guy was the laughingstock of quarterbacks. He debuted as a rookie in a soccer stadium and turned the ball over five times in the first half. What if I'm the guy to revitalize that guy's career? What if I'm the guy, if I'm the reason Nathan Peterman becomes a quality NFL quarterback? And it feels like he's going to give him as many opportunities as possible, and it feels like an ego play with Gruden and Peterman.
Well, Peterman, the reclamation project did look good, but I want to caveat it. Two scoring drives on an 80-yard field to win a preseason game against backup does not exactly make you an NFL quality quarterback.
Knock on wood if you hear me, Fez. By the way, as we finish up on the Oakland Raiders and Hard Knocks, Brad, I know that you guys are going to get John Gruden here, and I know John Gruden's going to be in Vegas, and he's already on the billboards, and he's going to be making the run. He's probably going to be the fourth member of the Blue Man Group at one point when he's in Vegas. He's going to run the town, and we get all that. But in watching how he interacts with players, in watching how he operates as a coach, you actually think that he might be miscast in Oakland/Vegas with the Raiders. Please explain.
Yeah, I just, you know, my mind wanders from time to time, and I try to get it to college because I'm a college guy. I mean, RJ's branding me as all the college knowledge, but I could just picture Gruden being a very successful college coach. And I started thinking this when I'd watch his QB Camp TV show. Just his interactions with those young quarterbacks. I mean, made for great TV, obviously, but I thought he just related very well with some of those younger quarterbacks. I think Gruden, because he's so dynamic of a personality, and who are the dynamic personalities in college football? It's not the players. It's the head coaches.
Yep.
Those are the rock stars of that sport. I just think he'd be one of the better recruiters in all of college football. I think he'd work very well at that level.
And I think he's a good salesman.
Yep.
It's why he's able to get along with so many of those players. Look, you can say what you want about how he's being, the message is getting across, but Antonio Brown seems to like him. He seems to be getting along with Derek Carr. So it does make sense from a recruiting standpoint that would be a strength of his, being able to sell himself and a program to a kid who's got a bunch of other options out there. And
absolutely.
Also, look, and also, when you can say, hey, man, I want a Super Bowl. And you can take that to a kid and say, look, this is about you getting to the NFL, right? You want to make money? I want a Super Bowl, all right? I had success in the NFL. Come play for me. I'll tell you the secret behind getting to that next level in your career. So I think that also is an advantage that Gruden would have. So, all right, it is Straight Out of Vegas here on Fox Sports Radio. Jonas Knox, Brad Powers, Steve Fezzik in for RJ Bell here on FSR.
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Out of Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. On Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
As we get back into the NFL, of course, the big story, one of the big stories in the NFL offseason, no Zeke. Ezekiel Elliott still not with the Dallas Cowboys. The season is fast approaching. Now, Jerry Jones was on 105.3 The Fan in Dallas. He talked about the benefits of having a fresh Zeke, quote unquote, that it could be a benefit to have a guy who's not all worn down towards the end of the season when they really need him for a playoff run. Zach Martin was very high on Tony Pollard, which we'll get into, Brad. The Cowboys' incumbent running back with Zeke not being with the Cowboys or with the team because of his holdout. But nonetheless, here we go. Jerry Jones trying to make the most out of a situation that has not looked good, saying a fresh Zeke would benefit to him, would benefit the Dallas Cowboys. And Brad, he kind of has a point, correct?
I think he does. Because, I mean, as you further along in a running back's career, you start worrying about the legs. And we gave this stat out: of the top 10 rushers in the NFL last season, 9 of them were under the age of 25. Only Adrian Peterson broke that trend. And let's look at Zeke's rushing attempts last year. 304, Fez. The workload is going to, at some point, maybe it's not this year, but certainly in the near future, you can't have too many seasons in today's day and age toting the rock 300 times. I think Jerry Jones is onto something. A fresh Zeke could certainly help out Dallas, especially when they're looking to make a playoff push.
Yeah, and looking back on it, that 6-game suspension in 2017 may have helped his legs stay fresh last year. And let's face it, when we look at that Dallas upcoming schedule, I don't think they need Zeke for at least the first couple games here.
Yeah, and that's funny you brought that up. So we were thinking about, all right, when does Dallas actually have to have Zeke back, all right? Because we can say whatever we want about, well, you know, they've got a backup here and they've got all this. And people can talk about James Conner, and he filled in admirably for Le'Veon Bell. That team didn't go to the playoffs. So clearly, Le'Veon Bell was a better running back than James Conner at this point in his career, and he's done more on the field. So with that being said, using this and looking at the Cowboys' early season schedule, guys, we teased it, but Brad, Fez, when do they absolutely have to have Zeke back in order to win games?
Week 4, when they go at New Orleans. Let's look at their first 3 weeks. Well, they get to host the Giants, and the Giants have all kinds of problems themselves. Week 2, they're at Washington, and Washington...
What's the line on the Giants game, Fez?
Giants are... Dallas is -7, and the reason that this line hasn't budged is that people want to bet against Dallas because Zeke might not play, and they want to bet against the Giants because they have no wide receivers, so it has stayed at 7. Then week 2... Dallas is at Washington. That line has stayed Dallas -3 because everyone wants to bet against Washington also with all the problems that they have. And then hosting Miami, the worst team in the NFL, Dallas will be laying probably 10 points by the time that game kicks off. So week 4, the hard part of the schedule kicks in. New Orleans, Green Bay at the Jets, Philly. And you got to feel Jerry Jones has looked at this and said, you know what? Maybe if we don't give Zeke a contract and we start out 2-0 or 3-0, all of a sudden, possibly we can negotiate a little bit better.
Yeah, and also, I mean, let's just, you know, be honest. After that, they've got the Packers, and when you go from 3-0 to potentially 3-2, then people start to hit the panic button. Then it becomes a bigger story. If it's a bigger story when the season's not going on, just imagine what the story is going to be like. It could we could turn this into Emmett Smith 20 something years ago all over again, to where you need him in to win some games. So you guys are saying week 4 is when they absolutely have to have Zeke back in order to contend and try and win that game, because it'll be at the New Orleans Saints. So let me ask you this. What is he worth?
Yeah, so amazingly, Zeke is the second. He and Barkley are the two most important non-quarterbacks in the NFL. They're only worth 1.5 points. That doesn't sound like a lot. But if you strip out all the quarterbacks, and a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL are worth 4, 5, 6, even 7 points to the line. But you get away from the quarterbacks. Only two guys in the NFL are worth a full 1.5 points. Barkley for the Giants and Zeke for Dallas.
So Saquon Barkley and Ezekiel Elliott are the most valuable non-quarterbacks in the league, according to Vegas.
Exactly right. And you talked about how important Le'Veon Bell was compared to James Conner. Half a point difference, so you can see how important Zeke is.
Now, what has it done to the season win total? Has there been any movement as far as the outlook on the season for the Cowboys? Was Zeke still not there and him not being there for the start of the season looking more and more likely?
The Cowboys have been lined at 9 wins all summer long, but I got to tell you, Jonas, the bettors are getting worried about when Zeke's coming back, because now we're starting to see extra vig. If you want to bet under 9, you could lay $1.10 a month ago. Now you got to lay -130 to make 100 extra vig on the under.
And now, so when you use the term vig, for people that are new to gambling or trying to take it up and just learning all the terminology and things like that, explain what the vig is and why that's important to know when it comes to sports betting.
That's how much that dastardly bookie charges you to place a bet. So a month ago, if you bet Dallas under 9, you had to risk 110 to win 100. And that's the bet that the sharp bettors have been making. So the bookmakers are saying, you know, we're getting overloaded with Dallas money. Let's go ahead and charge them extra. Currently, the bookmaker is charging you -130. You got to risk 130 to win 100 on Dallas under 9 wins.
Okay, so from that over to who is the running back right now with the Dallas Cowboys. Brad, Tony Pollard is the guy right now for Dallas. Zach Martin is very high on him. Others have been very high on him. He's performed well in the preseason so far. What do you make of Tony Pollard as a replacement for Zeke for the season upcoming?
I like him for a short extended period, and hear me out here. I just got done saying that Ezekiel Elliott last year toted the rock, just rushing attempts, not even counting the pass catches, Fez. 304 rush attempts for Zeke just last year alone. Tony Pollard should have some fresh legs. Here's why. Because Tony Pollard was not the backup running back at Memphis, the third string running back at Memphis. In his entire career, Tony Pollard, every single rush attempt, every single reception, 243 in his entire Memphis career, rushing and receiving. He should have some fresh legs, but I would be very worried. I don't think Tony Pollard's capable of doing what Zeke did last year, and that's toting the rock 300-plus times in a season. That would really concern me if I'm the Cowboys.
And so kind of similar to Arian Foster when he played at Tennessee, he didn't play as much because he wasn't the starter, but when he got to the NFL, he didn't have the wear and tear and actually had a pretty good and successful NFL career.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it definitely because, I mean, the Dallas offense line's healthier than what it was a year ago. So, right. I mean, we've seen, what, three or four different backs behind this offensive line have really successful seasons so far. So I could see it. I just don't, I mean, if you're expecting Tony Pollard to be the answer for the next, I mean, maybe he can do it this year, but I would have some major concerns about him being your lead ball carrier for the next three, four seasons. I don't see it.
Darren McFadden ran for over 1,000 behind this offensive line. Now, it'd be some pieces of
and they got rid of
there.
Yeah, right
and they got rid of him right afterwards. Joseph Randall, before he went off, off the deep end with whatever else he was getting into off the field, he averaged like 6 yards a carry behind that Dallas offensive line. So they've had success with other guys stepping in there and being able to provide adequate help when it comes to that. But then all the pressure then relies on Dak Prescott and how the passing game is and so on and so forth. So at Tony Pollard, Brad, you were saying he'll get you by for a little while, but ultimately you're going to need Zeke, and ultimately it's going to be by week four at the Saints if Dallas wants to continue their winning ways early on in the season.
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Outta Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Steve Fezzik, you are our NFL expert here on Straight Outta Vegas, and we have seen a trend. Everyone likes to dismiss preseason football and say, oh, it's not worth anything. It's getting worse and worse. Starters aren't even playing. But believe it or not, to the guys in Vegas, you've actually learned a lot about the preseason. What have we seen, especially from a coaching standpoint?
Yeah, the one thing in preseason that's held true to form is that coaches who were successful in the past in preseason have continued to be successful. Specifically, Jonas, if you did nothing else except for back the most winning coaches in preseason against the spread and go against the coaches who have lost against the spread, you are 14-1-1 betting every one of these games this year.
And so is it just because some coaches seem to care more than others? Is that really what this comes down to?
That is really the factor. It trumps everything else. And specifically, let me outline them. The four coaches that care: Baltimore, Harbaugh, loves to win. Oakland, Chucky, Gruden, loves to win. Minnesota, Zimmer, a cover machine. And Seattle, Pete Carroll. Those are your bet on coaches. Your bet against coaches: Dallas Garrett, who's actually been the one cover this year for the Cowboys. But Atlanta, Quinn, 0-4 against the spread. Anyone who thinks that coach motivation is fairly comparable, well, go back and watch when Quinn put in Danny Etling at quarterback last week. That was a disaster.
All right, Fez. So that being said, your best bet, does it involve one of these coaches falling into that trend?
Of course it does,
there
Jonas.
It is.
We're going to go with, in Zimmer we trust, Minnesota -3 versus Buffalo. Obviously, we're looking to back our successful coaches anyways. But the second key reason here, quarterback rotation, specifically third string quarterbacks, because we're not expecting much playtime from the first and second stringers. And Minnesota's third string quarterback, Slaughter, has slaughtered defenses all preseason long with a quarterback rating above 130 and three straight games. Contrast that with Buffalo's Tyree Jackson, who has been absolutely anemic in all three of his games. In Zimmer we trust, we bet Minnesota -3.
All right, so you've gotten Steve Fezzik's best bet for tomorrow. That game is the Vikings at the Bills, so you like Minnesota -3. Brad Powers, what say you? Do you also have a best bet you want to hand out to everybody listening here on Fox Sports Radio?
Let's go to college football tomorrow, Thursday. They call it the holy war in the state of Utah. I'm going to take BYU +6.5 here, and it's mainly a fade against a Utah team that I think is getting too much preseason publicity. Utah, in the AP preseason poll, highest ranking ever in school history for Utah. They're in the top 15, and this is a Utah team that, yes, they've beaten BYU 8 straight years, but BYU has lost those 8 games. 7 of them have been by one score or less. So BYU is just a play or two away from having a couple victories here against the Utes. This is a BYU team that should be plenty motivated because they blew a 20-point lead against Utah a year ago, Jonas. At home, in a big rivalry game, almost getting a full touchdown here. Give me BYU plus the 6.5.
I love it. How does Brad Powers welcome college football into your world from a betting standpoint? He gambles on Mormons. That's the best. Yeah. I love it. Brad Powers going the holy war route when it comes to week one in college football. Now, that being said, Brad, looking at college football and how all these lines are set up, I know we don't really know how good these teams are. We're just going based on a preseason rating. Is it commonplace that a lot of these lines may be off based on preseason rankings from people that are just voting on what they guess a team is going to be as opposed to having a preseason to look at?
No question about it. These are what we call in Vegas the softest lines of the year because we don't have data points on these teams. And it's all going off of preseason power ratings, expectations on what we perceive to be these teams to be. Let's face it, Jonas, I don't even think the coaches are 100% confident. They know exactly what they're going to see when these 18, 19-year-old kids roll out this weekend.